Rommels looks for Brandt. Opportunity here, Witzel is there. It's squeezed into the back of the net. And Borussia Dortmund take the lead on the night and level the tie. Sancho into the penalty area. Madsen into the penalty area. It's Madsen. It's 2-0. And they turn the tie on the head. Ian Madsen. Savitzer with a cross into the middle. And how about this? Niklas Fulkrug puts Borussia Dortmund ahead on the night. Looking for Brandt. Fulkrug in the mix again. Savitzer. Oh, it's 4-2 Dortmund, and they're ahead of the tie. 2 goals in 2 minutes.
Hey, welcome back to the BVB podcast. My name's Jake, joined as always by Carver, and we got a special guest this week. Special episode, big win, Champions League coming off. I know we had 24 hours-ish to process everything, but I think we're all still feeling pretty freaking hyped. Stefan Busco from the Yellow Wall Pod is joining us. Man, how are you doing?
I'm doing amazing. What's good, everyone? Hello and welcome to the semi-final of the UEFA Champions League.
Carver, how are you doing?
Doing great. It didn't even hit me. I don't know how I didn't realize that the final this year was in Wembley. And then it all kind of started rushing back to me of 10 years ago, or 11 years ago, I guess, technically. This coming up on this day almost, that is potentially going to be another rematch between the two sides in Wembley at the finals. So either way, though, I'm not trying to look too far ahead. I'm just happy to be here.
And when we were previewing this upcoming match, a memory came back to me while we were recording last week where I don't want to say that I wasn't pessimistic, or not that I didn't believe we could move on and win, but I definitely said something along the lines of, like, we've let ourselves down in front of the fans at home before, and I was worried it might happen again. And holy hell, they did not disappoint. Just complete scenes. Beating Atletico and coming back in the second leg and winning and moving on the semifinals, like you said. We do have another match to preview or review. I don't know if we want to talk about it too much because there's just too much Champions League stuff to talk about. But real quick, I guess, if you have any thoughts, because we haven't reviewed or talked about Gladbach and that match that happened over the weekend. We can just do some quick fire thoughts before we talk about Champions League. Carver, I'll let you start. Yeah, you got anything?
There's just so many emotions that happened in both of these matches, really. I mean, really, both of these games had so many moments of just roller coaster, up and down. Gladbach have won each of their last three home games against Dortmund as well. So this was a crucial game to not only stay in the race for Champions League, but just to bounce back and grab some form against them as well. I'm glad we finally pulled out the win. There were some bumpy moments. There was a lot of obstacles we had to overcome too. Like I said, lots of moments. Thought Gladbach was going to get back into it. Went a man down. There was a penalty, but then there wasn't a penalty. But ended up with a win, which is just huge going into the Champions League.
Well, I'm just glad we're back in the semifinal. yeah, as you said, Carver, it was a stupid game. It should have been a much easier win than it was. Shout out to Marcel Sabitzer finding form then. Very annoyed by Alea's injury 1 minute into the game. I didn't think Moukoko, when he came on, did much to really contribute. Otherwise, Gladbach are total ass. I think we can agree on that. I don't know what they're doing, but they're just completely drifting into obscurity right now, which is unfortunate because they're a huge club and the Bundesliga is full of teams that need teams like Gladbach to perform better because, you know, we have Wolfsburg, we have Leverkusen, we have Hoffenheim, etc. etc. You know the story. So I'm always there for the traditional teams to do a little better. Other than that, the VAR penalty call was hilarious. I've never seen anything like that before where you score a penalty and then it's not given. The referee did not blow the whistle, so I guess the review was not concluded yet. But at least it was nice that Adeyemi got the call by the referee, which is also not something he usually gets. At least not he got the initial call, then it was taken away, but I don't know if it was the correct VAR call, but doesn't matter. Dortmund did win the game. It was a must-win game to stay in touch with Leipzig. They did that, took care of business before the Champions League. Obviously, really, really vexing that Adeyemi got himself sent off because of the game in the Champions League that was to happen just a few days later. And yeah, luckily Dortmund did pull through. But yeah, an annoying game. Don't want to talk about it anymore. Let's talk about the Champions League.
Cool. Yeah, we can move on. All I had in my notes was job's done. Did well to even going a man down, still be able to hang on and get the win out of it and get the 3 points and move on. And yeah, move right into the Atletico Madrid game. Starting with the lineup, Koble in goal. We had Ryerson, Hummels, Schlotterbeck, Mats in our back line, Sabitzer in again with Chan, and then Adeyemi, Brandt, Sancho up top with full Krug. Running all the way up top. And then, I mean, the one thing from Gladbach is like we almost saw the return of Malen, and we saw him for a little bit, and then now he's nowhere to be found. I think they tweeted out after releasing the lineup that he had another injury. I don't know if – I hadn't seen any more details about that, but that's just frustrating that it's just a persisting thing. Like, we haven't seen Malen, which I think – not that I'm not excited at all, but I think to go like we've been down, we've been missing Malen for a while. We've been missing some other players here and there. And so to, I think even coming to this match with Adeyemi stepping up a bit, Sancho has been more than capable, obviously also. So it's nice to see us get the result in this fashion, even missing what we would probably say like our strongest 11. Unless you guys disagree, but I mean, your thoughts, Stefan, looking at this lineup going into this match?
Yeah, very annoying. Malen, probably the most informed attacking player we have, and Alea, when he is fit and healthy, definitely the best striker also. And I've said it before, Alea is a major difference maker. I'm glad that Adeyemi was a bit more pulled together for the Champions League game, but nevertheless, ideally, you want to start Malen and then have a super fast Adeyemi run, maybe at a tired Atletico. But yeah, they made it work regardless. And shout out to Dortmund for doing that, because Atletico, as far as I'm concerned, pretty much had their best 11 minus the guy who got suspended in the first leg. So yeah, to really have this kind of a performance with the somewhat weakened starting 11 speaks for the team and coach.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned, or both of you mentioned, Malen being out, and I think Sabitzer has done a great job these last two games of picking up a lot of that weight and putting it on his shoulders. I mean, like you said, what a time for him to catch some form and get involved in a number of ways too. I thought his performance for the second leg against Atletico versus the first one was night and day. You know, his first game, I thought he was a bit static, didn't help too much at midfield. It was just the complete opposite. Him and Brandt both had a lot of movement. Sabitzer had a lot of great runs, some good touches to keep attacks alive, and even set up Mattsson for his goal as well, disrupting Madrid's low block at times whenever they eventually did, and both legs fall back into their usual defensive self. Sabitzer did a really good job of exploiting a lot of that and, you know, just getting us on the board. Just wanted to shout him out. I mean, he had two terrific games, arguably his two best performances in a Dortmund kit, you know, just in a row.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of my questions off the bat. I had this question posed after the in my notes after the Gladbach match, but then he steps up again in this match. Obviously, I think these two matches and performances were like far and above like kind of other performances we've seen from him. Obviously, he's stepping up quite a bit, but have we been underappreciating him, or like maybe not showing him as much love as he's deserved, like as far as the signing goes? I don't know, not a ton of people were excited. I think wages kind of play into that a bit, but has he? I feel like obviously these performances stand out amazing, but overall, like, I think he's been pretty reliable. We've seen him start I think more matches than start on the bench, and he's obviously getting that over Mecha, who was out a bit. But as far as just kind of a reliable player, like I think he has been that, and maybe I don't think we've shouted him out ever on this podcast before, so I don't know. I think he's a decent signing. Maybe these two performances make up for everything, but I think he has been reliable throughout the whole season so far.
Yeah, it wasn't just the wages too. I mean, he also had a pretty decent fee when it came. What do we spend, like 20 million on him for someone who just turned 30 recently? But Another thing about it, I know I've like mentioned him a handful of times. Maybe it was his goal against like Frankfurt the first time I mentioned him, but I don't think we have, I guess, appreciated him as much. But it has taken a while for him to integrate himself into the team. He's seen a lot of change in scenery in the past, just what, like 2 years of his career, from Leipzig to Bayern to Manchester United and now to Dortmund. So, I mean, he's been under a lot of different systems, but he's certainly trying, you know, starting to find his footing a bit more. And I think you're also seeing his confidence too. He's not really, you know, he's not shy to have a go and have a crack from range. And you're starting to see him do that a bit more and definitely get rewarded for it as well. So, yeah, I'm excited for him and excited for the team.
Yeah, I certainly like the adjustment to push him up a little further.
Yeah.
Almost like a Jude Bellingham role, if you will. And I think that really helps him because he's not a real number 8. He's more of a number 10, really. And it works out quite well that he is further up because he makes more plays happen. Especially, he's really good in pressing, counter-pressing. That's sort of his forte. And his motor is just... relentless, really, which is why he played so well against Atletico. I mean, it was him, funnily enough, who was putting Morata under that, maybe a little bit of pressure in the, what was it, second, third minute,
yeah.
and forcing that probably very crucial miss, because I don't know how this tie goes. But obviously, on the other hand, he could have also already put us 1-0 ahead with that chance that Adeyemi created and Brandt, basically. But nevertheless, I mean, 2 assists, 1 goal, but I feel like this was probably one of the, I don't know, performance for the ages, 10 out of 10. Definitely, he was everywhere on the football field. He really did not put a foot wrong other than where he should have scored.
Yeah, I was going to say, we haven't mentioned that yet.
Yes, but I mean... just the sheer amount of will, and to me, like, just the image of when the referee blew the full-time whistle and Zabitzer was just laying flat on the ground because he just had left everything out there and he hustled so much. He ran through so many gaps and closed so many players down, and just also on the ball, he was really good to you know, not really make many mistakes. Always with a lot of dynamic, and of course he made so many good runs. I mean, the run in behind Witzel, I think it was before the 3-2, to read that situation, to have the energy to make that run, to be way ahead of the opponent then and playing the cross to Füllkrug. I mean, these are the kind of runs your number 8 maybe doesn't make necessarily, but if you have a guy who plays a bit more advanced, does it pretty well. And I think shout out to Emre Can, because without Can, Zabitzer's role isn't possible, because Can really needs to tone himself down a little bit. He needs to take a few steps back, because otherwise you have two players that are way too offensively minded. And Can basically did a very, I don't know... He just didn't try too many things, which is what Emre Can needs to do anyway, because he's not as good as he thinks he is, I think. But, you know, to keep things simple, especially in such a high-stakes game, was really key to free up Zabitzer to do a little bit more.
Yeah, Can picked out a few great passes as well, like that the one that Sabitzer made for Mattsson's goal. Can picked out that pass as well. I'm excited to see Can starting to, it looks like, have a little bit more confidence on the ball,
Sancho.
Too.
I think Mattsson's goal was set up by Sancho. Sancho to Sabitzer.
It might have been, but I have the... Oh, maybe you're right. Maybe right now I'm just looking. But either way, he picked out a few of those runs from Sabitzer, even against Gladbach as well. So
Can had an amazing pass to Brandt before the fourth goal.
Mm-hmm.
That was his amazing pass. That was almost as good as the pass from Hummels to Brandt.
Do you think that could be a midfield trio that we could see going forward of Brandt and Sabitzer almost as dual 10s or an 8-10 at times?
I think this is pretty much set in stone for every big game now, which is funny because I think if you look at the schedule, every game now is a big game. So,
yeah.
I think maybe against Leverkusen on Sunday, there needs to be a bit of a rotation. But yeah, I think they harmonize really well. Jürgen Brandt also had a really big game. And so... I think this is sort of set in stone, especially on the back of those performances. If, for whatever reason, Zabitzer comes back to earth, maybe you put in someone else. But for now, I don't see a reason to change it.
Yeah, I'm not sure who you would even put in if Sabitzer or Chan are not on their games. I was thinking recently, like, it's crazy what I have here. I mean, in 2019, we had five other, you could say sixes or even eights, with like Delaney, Witzel, Chan just recently arrived. Dahoud was there at the time. It's probably another one at the top of my head that now that I'm forgetting. But it's almost completely flipped on its head, where you have, besides Chan, it's very underwhelming when you look on the bench of someone else that could fulfill that role, that can be that, whether it's like deep lying playmaker or just the anchor man behind Brandt and Sabitzer. Because Özcan, I think, had a lot of very simple passes that he messed up against Gladbach. So you could see how just crucial it is for us to get a better number.
I was ranting about Özcan not being able to play a simple 5-meter pass while not being under pressure. Uh-huh. And then he upgrades that to not being able to play a simple 2-meter pass.
Yeah.
While not being really under pressure. And yeah, it's a shame, because I had high hopes for Özcan, but at this point it's difficult to see a longer term future. Like, he's a good backup and whatnot, but really you want to upgrade probably Chan and Özcan both going forward.
Yeah. And that was the other name. Now, he left midway through the season, but Weigl was also here. So, like, all of those players were at our disposal, at least at some point during the season. And it's just, again, completely flipped on its head. And I think Madsen still should be arguably our number one priority to try to go for. But just behind that has got to be a distributing number six.
Yeah. And so on specifically Sabitzer, I was going to, well, shout out that not only he, like, stepped in with this performance after already playing 90 minutes against Gladbach, and then came in and I think goes another 90 with an amazing performance, at, like we mentioned, being the age of 30, like, for him to be able to do that. And I don't know. Awesome. I'm just happy. Great. Awesome. I'll take it. And I wonder how much of, I mean, all the new assists in Shaheen and Bender, them coming in, we thought with all the talk and everything, and Terzic still here, and like, if this is going to change up tactics, or like, if they're really taking control of the tactics and everything, I wonder if this change of this specifically Chan knowing to stay back a little bit, be that guy who stays back to allow Sabitzer to go forward, if that comes from them, if this was a change up from Terzic, if this is someone who's able to recognize, we don't need to get on in and all the Terzic stuff specifically, but maybe things are, the tide is turning a little bit, we're figuring things out a little bit more. Maybe we just had two big wins randomly, and we just ride on that. I don't really know how it all comes into tactics, but if this is the key, if they have figured it out, if Chan knows, like, okay, with Sabitzer in, him and Brandt are going, or he's moving up with Brandt, I need to stay back. Like, if those roles are understood, then it's just, I mean, it's great going forward. I also, coming into this match, we've talked a lot about us going down a goal early and then being able to come back, right? Like, needing that extra motivation of fight. And approaching this game, obviously different than how we've approached other Champions League games, because we are down. Like, we're down on aggregate 2-1. We need to come back. We need to win. We need to put on a performance, which we see, as you mentioned, Sabitzer in the first couple minutes missing that chance. Should have been a goal. Luckily, they missed one shortly after that. But, like, we already came into this match having to fight against a difficult team to do that against, because Atletico can sit back with their five and then just absorb the pressure. But we were able to pile it on. We were able to get the goal by Brandt in the 34th minute. I almost mistook, even though I'm looking right at it. So, I mean, we want to talk about the goal off the bat. And then, I mean, we had a couple windows of goals where we score and then we score again, which is awesome to see. But, Stefan, you want to jump in with the Brandt goal specifically?
Well, I mean, what's so great about this is how high Dortmund were pushing up and really putting Atletico under a lot of pressure. I mean, the fact that Mats Hummels managed to play that pass from the half of the opposing half, that makes sense, is really amazing. And yeah, what a beautiful outside of the boot pass. And Julian Brandt, I think you can see Füllkrug pointing toward Brandt in this situation, sort of, that's the guy you have to play to. I think it was already evident before that. It was also evident in the first leg, but I think in this game even more so, that Dortmund were really targeting Axel Witsel because of his deficiencies very much known in Dortmund. There's enough video evidence from his time in Dortmund that we all remember this lineup, legendary center back pairing, Pongracic and Witzel, in the 3-1 loss to Hertha. So, I think Dortmund really exploited that well. The pass was amazing, and Julian Brandt has the technique to take the ball down. And Witzel does one thing well, I think. He delays his run a little bit to force Brandt to the outside, but then does not have the speed to actually recover. And obviously, the angle is really tight, and you would hope that the goalkeeper, especially of the format of Jan Oblak, would make that save. But it was a powerful shot, and Brandt was just lucky enough to score it. And to me, a wonderful moment. But it came in the face of pressure. I think that's the important key here, because this goal wasn't scored sort of out of nothing, like Atletico's first goal in this game, where it came off a corner kick. But here, Dortmund really sort of waited for the gaps to open, and open they did, and then Brandt with a bit of individual skill slotting it away. And I think the second goal is even better in that regard, because of the overload on the left side. You had Brandt, you had Sancho, you had I think Sabitzer making the run, you had obviously Maatsen there, and really having a nice entry pass from Sancho. And it was just fun to see how well oiled that Dortmund machine played, because for so many games this season we never really saw a sort of game plan put in place, and this time it looked like there was a tactical setup and some sort of preparation from Dortmund to execute plays like those. And of course, really nicely done from Sabitzer to have the layoff to Maatsen, and I think the goal was so well taken that I know it's once again from a very tight angle, and DXG probably not really high on that one, but nevertheless, it was so well hit that I don't think there's a goalkeeper that really saves it, because that was such a powerful shot and right into the bottom corner, hard to save. So just kudos to Maatsen. Now the only question I have is, do you want to re-sign him? I feel like I want to say yes, but if the price tag is 40 million, are there better left backs out there for such a high price?
There could be. I could be wrong. Did they raise it? I thought the release clause was 35. Is it now 40?
Yeah, maybe it's 35. I don't know if it's 35 million pounds or euros, though. I don't know what the exchange rate is either.
Yeah. I haven't done much scouting for other, I guess, left backs that I would prefer over Maatsen personally. But I did want to say that I was also impressed that we stuck with the game plan throughout the whole game two of targeting Witzel. And you could, I mean, definitely for our, the third goal, with the Brandt run behind Witzel. And I think that was Koke as well. It was the same thing, right? Targeting it and Sabitzer making a run in behind and kind of exploiting that space. I was surprised Atletico sat back in a number of spells throughout both of these legs, because you could see any time they actually wanted to come out, pressure and attack, they always were dangerous. And I think you could probably point, I mean, of course, there were some individual blunders from Atletico.
I love how you're surprised by Atletico of all teams sitting back.
I think just because every time, and again, like both halves in both games, when they wanted to attack, they were so dangerous. It, just in the opening minutes of that second half in this game, Correa was so much of a handful for any of us to really handle. And they made a handful of chances and, of course, scored two goals too. And you would think they just keep going, because when they put us under pressure, they would. I mean, we had no answer for that either. And we gifted two of the goals in the first leg in the same way. So I don't know. I guess I'm not surprised, but at the same time, just given how successful they were in just these two games, I'm surprised Simeone just kept forcing them right back. But yeah, to answer your question, going back, I'm not sure another left back, at least off the top of my head, that I would prefer to Maatsen with that price. At least that's readily available in the summer.
I think there's some importance too in already being established, clearly clicking with the team. He looks pretty happy. I think there's added value in that, to the fact that he's already in the door and performing. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can. Yeah, again, if there was like a clear and obvious, yeah, this is the left back we should get. then sure. But like, I'm all for keeping Mattson. I think I said that last time we talked too. Like, I want him. Just pay the money. Pay the money. Take this Champions League money and pay it and get that.
And the World Cup money forever. Yeah, hopefully Champions qualification for next year too as well. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, financial add-ons that we were not, I guess, entirely anticipating on in just the last like few months. So I think that should hopefully be a factor for us to continue this overhaul in the summer that we're, you know, hearing about more and more, and it's not so aimless.
Stefan, what's your take on Sancho and getting him to stay, what that might take, what the cost might be, or what the likelihood of that happening?
Well, I think Manchester United probably will not demand too high a fee. It really comes down to how much of a pay cut Jadon Sancho is willing to take and whether he feels at home at Dortmund, because I think this is a very personal decision for him. Manchester United really did not work out for him at all. He really got burned there. So my question really is if he's willing to take a pay cut, because I think he makes 18 million euros or something in Manchester right now, and obviously Dortmund will not be able to pay that sort of wage. But
probably not even half of that.
Well, I think they would pay him around 10 or so. I think that would work. However, if he says, okay, I want 15, 16 at the minimum, then yeah, he's probably going to be out the door. Maybe there's going to be, I don't know, another agreement for another 1 year loan or so. But at the end of the day, it would obviously be amazing if Dortmund could manage to find a way to have him stay on, because I think what this game and the previous game against PSV, what they have shown, maybe he is not quite on the level yet where he was when he left Dortmund, because, you know, when he's taking on opponents, not all the time he's beating them in the same way. But he has matured so much into a player that can A, be a difference maker, but also just the completeness of him now, the way he defends. If you know that you have someone who actually hustles and who just knows where to be on the pitch in terms of positioning and whatnot, you know, very far away from the, you know, very immature beginning of Jadon Sancho, I think that is worth a lot too. And there's always the upside that he finds his groove back to where he was, because he's still relatively young. So I don't think he's lost that. It's more of a psychological thing, but also opponents obviously account for his dribbling, and he was doubled up quite a lot. So yeah, I really hope that he feels at home enough and sees what he has at Dortmund to want to continue to play here, because I think for Dortmund it is a no-brainer to keep him around, especially if Daniel Mayen decides that he wants to move on to bigger and better things. Then maybe it becomes realistic and affordable. But yeah, for now, I'm just enjoying the ride with both Mattson and Sancho, because I don't think without either of these transfers, we would be talking about the Champions League semifinal here, nor would we even talk about a chance for Dortmund to still finish in the top four.
If we didn't get Mattson in, who would be playing? Who would be playing left back right now?
I think it would Ryerson, be
Ryerson and then Wolf.
Yeah,
on right back.
I don't even want to think about Wolf.
Well, no, that's the right, like, I don't mind Ryerson out there, but it's like you're still missing a fullback.
Yeah. No, especially because Ben Zivaini would be injured now anyhow. So, yeah, really, really tough luck. I mean, this transfer really did not work out. I mean, I don't want to gloat too much, but I think that one was very easy to see coming, because Ben Zivaini never really impressed me at Gladbach. And just because he was a free transfer, so to speak, does not really... I don't know. It did not invoke me, fill me with confidence, sorry, to be honest, because he was always mid. So, yeah. Glad Dortmund have found someone better, and hope that they would just tell Ben Zivaini, okay, it's been not been a good year, but maybe it's time for you to already pack your bags. But maybe they bet on him and he'll come good next season. That thing can also always happen, but I personally don't see it.
I think it also depends on, going back to Sancho, on the interest from other clubs this summer. Now that we're in the semifinal, clearly this is a huge stage for Sancho to showcase what he can do. And obviously, I've seen a lot of United fans say that they watched the game last night, and it seems split between, like, you know, we should be having him back or not. And I'm also curious to see if, even if he did go back to United and I guess wanted to give it another go there, I'm not sure if like the completeness you talked about in his defensive efforts would necessarily translate, because a lot of the people, I guess that I've just, these are just online people that have been criticizing Sancho that are United fans over the past few years, they're saying, you know, the same problems that we saw with him, with his immaturity at Dortmund, translated over there. And of course, things have turned around here. And I'm just not sure if it's just because he just feels so at home here or not. But either way, I think this is obviously good for his career, for him to be at such a huge stage. And I think it gives a little bit more, I don't know, powers, I guess, not the right word, but for United, for, you know, them to kind of weigh options now and see what other clubs might be interested in him. Not sure how many there would be, though.
With everything going on at Manchester United, with their new semi-part owners coming in and possibility of Erik ten Hag leaving, I don't know, like, just kind of throws a wrench in everything, too. Like, I think if we can get another loan, that would be the most ideal scenario. It's just going to be interesting. How much do you think like a possible Royce extension, how much that conversation plays into, I know Malin obviously plays into it a bit, but how much the Royce extension plays into this too?
Well, if there is a Royce extension, but obviously Royce is one of the absolute top earners. So if he's no longer on the wedge bill, that would obviously free up a lot of money for someone like Sancho for sure.
I think a lot of that comes down for if Terzic stays, which is the same case with Hummels as well. And it looks like, from according to reports today, that I don't know how much validity that has to it, but it looks like that might be out of the question, I guess, because of the Champions League. But we'll have to wait and see in the coming weeks.
We can get back on the game a little bit. I do want to show some love to Füllkrug, because I thought he was going to sub off like 15 minutes into this match. He was not looking great. I know he kept grabbing his sides. He went up for that header. I think he got tangled up with Witsel, falling down. He's grabbing his ribs, and then you see the trainers come onto the pitch, and he takes some kind of pain meds, and then is just like cruising after that, and it worked because he then gets a goal in the second half, and I didn't think he was going to last that long. So, I don't know if you guys have any specifics on Füllkrug, but I just like appreciate the drive to keep going and get a goal in the end of it.
I mean, Niklas Füllkrug was never going to be an elite striker. So for him personally to score a goal in front of the yellow wall in Dortmund on what was a magical night, really, and help secure Dortmund a semi-final is incredible for him. I don't think he'll ever forget that. And the goal he scored, Thierry Henry on CBS said it was Drogba-esque in the sense that he sort of dipped in behind the defender, came out of his view, and then at the last second jumped in front of him to win the header. And yeah, it is really hard to defend, and obviously the header was perfectly placed. I don't think you can do anything about it. Füllkrug said post-game that he thought it was sort of curling away from goal, but then when he saw that it actually landed in the goal, he was a bit surprised. But I think this is one of his major qualities, headers like those. Dortmund obviously don't play that many crosses where he can really show that. But in that instance, perfect run, perfect cross. And Dortmund really with a lot of force in that situation, and really already the momentum swimming back to them. So I think overall he had a pretty good game, a lot of decent ball holdups. But I honestly was thinking about, you know, especially in the first half, what if we had Marco Reus just as a striker instead of Füllkrug, because you have then another player that has a higher Q running capabilities where you just open gaps for other players, because I wasn't quite sure if Füllkrug, who isn't really a poacher currently, would get in those situations to score a lot of goals. But credit to him. He had this header, and then when it was 4-2, there was, I think it was a pass from Schlotterbeck or Hummels, can't quite remember, but where he was in on goal again, and obviously that was a good save by Oblak. But yeah, there was another good run, because to head the ball into your path to even stay in front of the defender is still pretty good. So that also equalizes, I think, on open goal misses in terms of 1v1 with the goalkeeper.
I think that was Schlotterbeck that played him in. And there was a few times, not only that game, but also, again, against Gladbach, that Schlotterbeck had a really good understanding with whether it was Füllkrug or even Sabitzer making those good runs. And, you know, Schlotterbeck playing those great balls in behind. So it's awesome to have two center backs that have that kind of passing range, that capability, and just the variety and the ways that they could pass too, right? We mentioned the outside the foot pass from Hummels. I cannot think of a single other center back in the world that can do that at that regular of a level too. I mean, it's just easy for him. And then Schlotterbeck the same way with his range of passing too, and his runs that he makes as like a left winger or even cam at times. It's really cool to have both of those at your disposal as center backs. But yeah, that header from Füllkrug and that's cross from Sabitzer with his left foot, mind you, too. Both were just peaches. There's nothing that you could do to save that from Füllkrug. There's no keeper in the world that will get even close to that.
Yeah, I think that was a nice back heel that Füllkrug had, which nearly came right to Jadon Sancho. I think there was just one foot in between that sort of popped the ball up a little bit. Otherwise, Sancho also would have been free on goal. So overall, I just think it was a really good team performance. I just, on the Yellow Wallpaper, called it the game of the season. But with a grain of emotionally, right? But with a grain of salt that I think there were a few mistakes that definitely need to be avoided against PSG, because that Hummels pass to Griezmann is a big no-no. Obviously, the way the set piece got defended was horrible. It did result in an own goal, but Julian Brandt needs to stay on his marker. He already did not do that against Gladbach. And just overall, there were a few situations where Dortmund got a little too passive, especially in the beginning of the second half. But yeah. There's not much you really want to nitpick after such a great victory, because I think this is one we'll still be talking about in 5 or 10 years, because that was just an amazing night. And the only way we could somewhat forget about this is if Dortmund beat PSG with even more verve.
I think there's anyone in Europe that I want that on a 1v1 versus Kobel, I'd arguably choose Morata. I was shocked that he missed the 1-on-1, but at the same time, like, man, I guess if there's anyone that would have missed that, it would have been him. So, and you know, if we're playing the likes of PSG, Dembele and Mbappe are going to finish those no problem. So, and the high lines, I think, too, is something we got to be really wary of. Of course, Hummels doesn't have the pace to catch up to pretty much anyone on that PSG front line. So we're going to be very smart with how we organize ourselves. And yeah, no, pray to God, no sloppy passes from the likes of Özcan or whoever, really.
I just wanted to say, I think that was key for Dortmund to actually create so much pressure on Atletico to not have sloppy giveaways in midfield for most of the time, and continuing to push them into the own half by passing the ball around for, I don't know, a minute or so.
Yeah, so looking ahead to PSG, we got a couple weeks with some big matches in between, but we'll play them Tuesday, April 3rd. So this is an opponent we've faced, obviously, in the group stage already. We lost 2-0 away. I think we drew 0-0 at home, and we start against them. That first match is home. First leg is at home. How much do you see, or what are your thoughts, like, since we have played them already in this competition, like how much do you think that affects this, like, in a positive or negative way?
I think it does quite a bit, actually, because both teams know each other quite well by now. But I think the best news for Dortmund is that they're so much better team. I think the first game away to Paris was really Terzic being scared money from the lineup to their whole approach. Dortmund probably could have done way more damage against PSG because they did not look very defensively sound, to be honest. But the fact that Dortmund had a back five and we're sort of just sitting back a bit like Atletico played, to be honest, I think it helps for the self-understanding of Dortmund now that they know what their plan is, what their game plan is, and sort of what their identity is a little bit better. And I think overall they have shown in the past in the Champions League, also against the likes, you know, like Manchester City, for example, that they can disarm more dangerous opponents for large stints. Obviously, I think Dortmund will be much more on the back foot in this game, But I do think it helps that they already had a crack at PSG and sort of know what their playing style is. So they're not entirely unprepared, but as Julian Brandt made the point, at the same time, PSG also know Dortmund. So, yeah, I don't know. It's tough because Dortmund definitely are not the favorites. I think the Atletico tie was always 50-50, and it was great that Dortmund prevailed. But this time around, I think PSG are definitely the favorites going into this game. And, yeah, need to make a few crucial mistakes for Dortmund to get past them into the Champions League final. It's crazy to even like talk about that at this point with this team and this season. Just makes no sense at all.
Looking back at the lineup too against PSG in the first meeting in the group stage too, I can't remember if we were just, you know, dealing with rotation, but our front two was Malen and Adeyemi too. And of course they both have like qualities in their own ways, but that's just a very toothless attack. And I wouldn't expect, just looking at it on paper, if you were to take away the score and I wouldn't know, I wouldn't expect us to get many, if any, goals really at Paris. But of course we're missing Haller. It looks like he's out for the rest of the season, unfortunately. Hopefully that's not the case, but with full crew just being in the form that he's in, hopefully he can be that focal point of attack and you know, work on the things that got us success against Madrid, the likes of just getting the crosses that he likes a bit more and more movement in midfield from Brandt and Sabitzer, a few other things too. But just hopefully it is a different team, especially too with Sancho. He can obviously exploit Hakimi. Hakimi has the pace, but he's not a great 1v1 defender. We know that too. So there's a number of ways that we could hurt PSG. I think arguably we are just got to be getting out of our own way, because a lot of these crucial games, we can step in our own way and shoot ourselves in the foot. And at times it almost happened. It did happen against Madrid and almost set us back to a point of no return. But the team had a really great amount of resilience about them and was able to pull themselves back and get a result here. So I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't be able to do the same thing against another a shit club like PSG.
It is almost comical how often Dortmund tripped over themselves in the Atletico game. Because
it is.
Honestly, I think this tie could have been much more decided had Dortmund not made these comical, really comical errors and very unlike them, really, at least in the Champions League. In the Bundesliga, that's exactly the Dortmund you know and love. But in the Champions League, they have managed to steer clear of those for the most part. So I personally hope that they can get themselves together again, because if they do, I think they have a decent chance against PSG, because they're no longer the absolute super team they were, I don't know, 2 years or so ago.
Before PSG, though, we got Leverkusen on the weekend. The champions, they do play, we're recording on Wednesday afternoon, they do play Thursday against West Ham, so that'll be interesting. Maybe that's their hangover game, maybe that's the one where all the beer showers affect them a little too much, and they, I don't know, maybe they rotate, maybe they just take the night off. I don't think they want to give up that unbeaten run or streak, but... But I think it does play. It's an interesting kind of tie-in that they've already won the Bundesliga, just to see how they. I know they have such a like historic thing going, being unbeaten, so they're not going to want to let up at all. But it, like, how are you guys feeling going into Leverkusen this weekend? I guess real quick. I know we got to kind of wrap shortly, so quick predictions, thoughts, feelings.
I like that we're at home too, and when we played against Leverkusen earlier in the season, they were. Arguably I haven't watched every Leverkusen game, but that team was very beatable that day. And we absolutely could and should have won given the chance that we kind of blundered at the very end of that match. But I don't see a reason why we couldn't at least go for it and likely get a result here. I'm interested to see if Moukoko gets some minutes, because just Fulkrug, obviously the Haller is out. He's been playing every single minute almost so far. And I'd like to maybe see Moukoko just get a bit more of an opportunity. I know he was very underwhelming against Gladbach, but also, I don't know. I thought maybe it was just too much of just the system being tweaked with Haller coming off and taking us to time to find our footing and get him involved, which we didn't ever really do. But now that we have time to actually know what we're up against and have, you know, those two options, maybe Terzic can work something out. But either way, it's going to be obviously very tough, but I think it's possible for us to at least get a result out of this.
Well, here are my three key points I hope Leverkusen are still too drunk to really reach the level of performance they need to beat Dortmund. I do hope that Dortmund rotate a little bit, as you said, because fresh legs, I think, are very much in order after they really played their asses off against Atletico. And three, end their stupid-ass streak. It's time.
Right. We could have ended it first time, and we actually can still do it here.
Well, I think in the reverse fixture, Dortmund were not playing well, and they were quite lucky to get away with a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was interesting because, we weren't playing well, and they also were beatable, but we weren't the team to do it, unfortunately. Maybe this time around, back at home, back at the Yellow Wall, or in front of the Yellow Wall, Sunday, 11:30 a.m. kickoff against Leverkusen. If you guys got anything else to add, we might wrap it up. Nope. On to the semis. We said it before. I said it a couple years ago. It's like, I just want a good Champions League run because it's always been, the last few years, it's just been such a sad... Europe has been so sad because even I think when we dropped out of the Champions League and went to the Europa League, we immediately lost to that.
So that was not a fun game either.
That was probably after that is probably when I was like, I just want to make a good run in Europe, and we're living it. It's freaking awesome. So don't take it for granted. And shout out to any new listeners. I know like runs like this is kind of where new people hop on board. As fans of Dortmund and maybe listeners of the show, so we really appreciate you guys hanging out and listening. Stefan, if there is a random Dortmund fan who's never heard anything before, this is their first time listening to Dortmund podcast. If you want to give a quick plug to you and everything you do, please do.
Yeah, if you want to listen to the exact same things I just said, do that on the Yellow Wall Pod. I think today we recorded episode 474. So, crazy. We've been around for 11, this is our 11th season, English language Dortmund podcast, just as yours. So go ahead, give it a listen. Otherwise, I don't have anything to plug, to be honest.
Please, make sure to check out the Yellow Wall Pod. It's still surreal to have you here on our show, given, and I mentioned the first time you ever came on, like I listened to you guys for a long time, but whenever I first listened to you guys, I had a night job working at UPS and I just cranked out episodes all night while I was loading trucks.
Yeah, I feel like podcasts like this are always very good to listen to when you like, I don't know, do the dishes. Maybe one last thing we should mention, Real Madrid just beat Manchester City to advance to the semifinal where they will play Bayern, meaning that two Premier League teams just lost. I have not quite looked at what it means for Dortmund being safe in the Champions League on fifth place, but I think it might help significantly. So if Leverkusen beat West Ham tomorrow, I don't know about the whole Aston Villa and the Conference League thing, but I think it deserves to be mentioned that this is very helpful for the German coefficient in the UEFA rankings.
Yeah.
That's why we recorded exactly until this moment, just to get, we were just kind of going a little long just to see the result. Yeah, that's huge. Awesome. So, we appreciate you guys hanging out, listening. We really do. And we will be back after Leverkusen. See you later.